Wow, man. What a time it has been. We release episode 98 today. We're here recording episode 99 today. And in 2 weeks, we have episode 100. What a time to be alive, Steve.
Yeah, it's something else. I can't imagine that I'm actually here. You know, I've been seeing all these podcasts around, and now here we are coming up to 100 episodes, and I'm just finding out that you're in Scranton. And I'm like, man, I'm in Scranton too. I'm Steve's PA, you know, this Scranton's finest.
Scranton's finest for sure, man, because, you know, it's actually pretty interesting that you mentioned that, because for multiple artists that have been on the show, we've had this conversation. I just kept hearing Steve. Shout out Steve. Shout out Steve. Shout out Steve. Shout out Steve. Bro, I could probably make a compilation. I could probably make a compilation of how many times we heard shout out Steve. Shout out Steve. And I'm like, yo, who is
Steve?
Who is the Steve's guy? Like, I got to tap in with him, you know? So, you know, we made that connection. I'm grateful for all the artists who have come on the show, who have shouted your name out, and just like basically put you on the map for me, because if it weren't for them, I would have never heard of who Steve's is. And much credit to the artists is for giving you the flowers that you deserve and being able to, you know, speak on your process and creating for them.
Yes, sir. I appreciate every one of them. All my clients, artists, just producer friends, anybody, you know, like, I appreciate all of them. They all show the most support and respect to me, and they know everyone's just here to kind of just do what they want to do and make it with their own passion and their own creativity.
And just grow, man. So as I said, thank God that, you know, we have made this connection. Because you are definitely a pioneer in the game, okay? You are definitely a pioneer in the game. And, you know, we had conversations, and I'm excited for this podcast. I'm excited to learn who you are. I'm excited at the fact that you're even episode 99, because, you know, as you said, Scranton's finest. We have Scranton's finest in the building today, guys. Welcome to the Middleman Podcast. I am the man in the middle, Kevin Martinez, and you already heard his name. It's Steez. Steez, yes, welcome to the show, my man.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Steez PA, okay? Steez, where did it all start, man? When did your music career start? You're a producer, engineer. You are masterful at what you do. So I think it's important to just start off at where you started. And, you know, we were talking about DAWs and some of the DAWs that you used in the beginning. So let's just open the show and start talking about it. What's going on, man? Where did it all begin for you?
I'd say to bring it real, real way back. I would say probably back in the day when I was just still in elementary, you know, dubstep was still a big thing. Skrillex, man, he was a hit back in the day when I was a kid. And obviously, it's like the Travis Scott and like the young boy of the Fortnite, like gritty and stuff right now on Fortnite. Like, all the kids love it. Like, it was just one of those things at the time. Like, as a kid, a lot of kids like dubstep and Skrillex and whatnot. And that kind of led me to the path of like, I want to make music, but I don't want to be a rapper. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to be a rapper. I knew at that point that, like, I wanted to just make the beats and the instrumental side of things just so you can actually feel what you're doing and make something of it. Because I knew at a young age that, like, listening to music on a surround sound speaker, you know what I mean? If I was just had the chance to blast it up, it makes you feel the song a lot harder than just hearing some vocals would, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's all because of the instrumental, the bass in the song, or just certain frequencies in the melody that your body and your brain just reacts to differently. So when I was real young, like I said, I picked up to that at a young age, and I liked Skrillex, and I knew he was just specifically a producer, electronic producer on his laptop or whatever he was doing at the time. So I was like, hey, I can do this. And this is like probably fifth, sixth grade me, you know.
Insane.
Yeah, so like, hey, I can do this. Got on my grandma's really old HP laptop and, you know, wait, real quick, shout out to HP. I bad about that. Shout
That's
out
not
HP.
Grandma's laptop.
That's not grandma's laptop.
I was about to say, it's so kicking.
But shout out HP, you know, I'm still rocking them ever since I had one since as a kid. They've been my favorite computer, so, you know, had to continue the legacy. But back to the story was, I had my grandma's old HP laptop. Thing barely loaded up Windows Explorer, okay?
I understand.
I'm on YouTube. I'm searching up blah, blah, blah. Good ways to make beats. Good ways to make music. Blah, 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 blah. How to. And it came across everyone had a cheap or free access to FL Studio. So long story short, couple downloads, couple how-to installs, and I had a free version of FL Studio in sixth grade. So don't take me to jail for that image line. But anyways, I own it now. I own multiple copies of it now. But anyways, so yeah, I was just like on it, had stock sounds, like didn't even know what I was doing, just had stock sounds, kick, clap, hi-hat, snare. I was like, all right, let's see what this is. Do the typical boom, clap beat. And that kind of just started the, all right, well, I got to learn how to do this. And I would say from sixth grade to to eighth grade, I was just learning, just like trying it out, seeing how to do things, looking on YouTube, watching producers at the time on YouTube that were big, just like that would post learning content, how-to videos in producing. So I learned, I got a little bit quote unquote proficient, I guess you would say. They sounded like beats, not just noises. And people knew I was doing it. And then we went into high school and people knew I was doing it. And my friends, they asked me, they were like, hey, like, do you want to be our engineer and producer and record our music and we could start like a rap group? And I was like, hell yeah. Like, sure, this is exactly, am I blowing up right now? Meanwhile, I'm like, just.
It's a surreal moment.
Yeah, I was like, I thought high school was going to be scary and now I'm blowing up as a producer. But that started like a whole trend. I would say it shifted Scranton in a good way. There at the time, there was not a lot of music in the area. And all the music that was happening was, I would say, another couple generations older than us. You know what I mean? So they were just a little bit older than us. And in that still boom bap rap style where our area was like 2016 to 2018, like Lil Yachty, Playboy Cardi vibe. Mm-hmm. So everything was so party-like. And we were just making music like that, like just Lil Yachty type of songs. They made no sense. The beats made no sense. Like, they were just so hard and like funny. And most of them were diss tracks. So like, we would just, yeah, right? They were mostly diss tracks. So like,
who you dissing in high school, bro?
Well, see, here's the thing. We ended up becoming that group and making music, and we're all great friends. So like, all the stuff that we did, we'd be in the studio. Well, the studio was Lil Sweater, Sweat Gang was the group. I don't know if anyone really...
Sweat Gang?
Sweat, like S-W-E twice.
Okay.
Gang. But like, everyone in Scranton, if you bring that up, they'll probably know it if they went to Scranton High or West Scranton or whatever in our generation. And what's it called? So like, all the music we were making, we'd just be like at his house, 2 a.m., like... having fun, just chilling. The boys chilling, making music, like joking around. And we're young kids. Like, we're all just kind of like making fun out of anything. We're playing a video game and we laugh our asses off at nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then we'd just be sitting there on the side. I'd be making a beat and I'd be like, all right, guys, it's ready. And we record in that hour until we were done. Sometimes it'd be the sun coming up and we'd do like 5-6 songs in one night.
Wow.
And, basically, everything that we did was just like what happened during school at that time, whether it was like something happened to a kid and everybody, the whole grade hated that kid.
Okay.
So they would rap a diss track type of song about that kid and the whole school would love it.
Poor kid.
and sadly, there was multiple songs like that. Like, there was just... more people just ended up falling into their line of path of like, yeah, you're getting put on a song and everyone's going to shine on us for it. You know what I mean?
Wow. Yeah, no, I get it. I get it, man.
And that was kind of just like really what it is. And I kind of just like grew off of that. And we grew really, really far together, all three of us. And it taught me a lot because I always said that I felt like I was a generation behind. Like, I grew up with a brother fairly older than me, so he taught me a lot. So I was always more mature than my age group.
Mm-hmm.
So I also learned a lot faster because I understood common sense at a younger age. So like, things kind of just clicked a little bit faster. So being in their environment, as we're all learning, I learned their problems on top of my problems and answered all of them. So it taught me very, very, very fast.
Taught you leadership skills, taught you some how to get through some diversity. I'm not going to say it, some diversity. I almost said versatility. That's a word that we made up here on the podcast.
I remember seeing that.
Yeah. To be diverse. I want to go back to something that you mentioned earlier. You know, the fact that common sense, things like that came easy to you. That's a good thing. You know, we've had Dan the Renaissance man come on the podcast. And he felt like as if when he was in the younger grade, he was more advanced, and he actually moved up in grades because he was just so advanced. And, you know, it was a little bit difficult to him to understand and kind of fit in with the crowd of people who he was with because he was like ahead, so far ahead. So I just want to go back to what you were saying early in the podcast, where you were saying how you would put on some, if you had the opportunity to put on like some music and really, really blast it and, you know, just really take in the beats and understand the sounds and understand the wavelengths that came to you and the emotion that it brought to you at a young age. Because I feel like when you get older, you really start to appreciate and start to understand the amount of effect that sound has for an individual. Okay. Definitely. Such as sound healing. Okay. And I think this is really cool that we're having this conversation right now, because I actually ran into something really unique the other day, which was it was about churches. Okay. And you know how churches, they usually have a circular glass pattern at some point within the building. The glass patterns are so unique. And so I was watching this video, and they were talking about how it is believed that churches give off a certain aura, okay? That there was an experiment that happened where someone, let's just say, produced a frequency or a wavelength. And they turned it up to a certain point, and what was happening was that wavelength was reflecting off of the glass, and it was projecting an aura, which an aura presents a color. It was presenting a color, and that aura and that energy is thought to be healing, you know, but not all the glass patterns are the same. So throughout this experimentation, they found that different stains of glass, different designs, produce a different aura, a different color. Yeah. And that to me was pretty mind-blowing, you know, just on the, I always knew that sound had an effect on people's brains and how we think about stuff. But to think that something as simple as glass can affect and twist the frequency that comes out of that,
it's
pretty unique.
It's different. And like you were saying, like a simple setting, like say the glass is a certain color, and the sun, they have the glass, certain pictures of glass set around the building for different times of the day they get shined on. So they shine at different times of the day because the sun is always going to pass around the building.
Yes.
So they have them placed around, and they're colored glass. So every, like you were saying, every picture may have a different story, a different feeling, different energy. And like you're saying, all the colors and the shapes, the sun reflects off of it. So say there's music being played or something that they need to hear, and that sunlight and the color reflected off the glass creates that energy in the room for the whole people to understand and really bring themselves into it. And that's ultimately the same thing with music. When I hear a certain melody bouncing off a really hard like bass line or a kick drum or something, I feel the beat in myself. I feel that I can really actually connect what the producer is trying to say from start to finish of the song. Each producer organizes a beat differently, makes a beat differently, makes it sound a certain way, whether it's energy, it's soft, it's hard, it's poppy, it's whatever it is. They all have their own story they put into their beats, just like artists do. So I feel like the instrumental side of things is the strongest part of connecting with music, and the vocals just make it easier for people to want to connect.
I can agree with that statement 100%, man. I could agree with that statement because, you know, 9 times out of 10, what grabs my attention in a song would be the beat. You know, when a beat comes through, yeah, depending on what it is, when it opens up, I will probably decide on whether or not I like the song. you know, but then
yeah, 100%. You'll know if the first part of the melody before anything happens is if it's too soft, slow, or sad or mean, hype. You'll know if you're not feeling it. You know what I mean? Instantly.
Exactly. So the instrumental is like a key. It's like the base, a platform. You know, you're making a sandwich. You need the bread. That's the bread.
Yeah, okay. Like you're going to eat a sandwich with no bread.
That doesn't happen. I mean, they do have those wedgie sandwiches where you just eat lettuce. You ever eat one of those?
No.
I ordered one by accident. I was so disappointed. No. I was so disappointed.
I don't think I can do that to myself. I enjoy food a lot.
I was disappointed. So what I also think is really, really cool as a producer, you know, we were just talking about it. You were saying how producers may create a different melody, beat, so on and so forth. And to think about that, bro, it's like you guys are really creating things that aren't really, you can't see it. You can't see it.
You just feel
what
it.
You guys are moving is molecules and atoms within the atmosphere that, you know, affects a person's energy.
Exactly.
And there's so much more to sound, man. There's so much more to sound. Healing powers, you know, just.
100%. I feel like there's so many people in this world that something that you relate to, a million people are going to relate to. So if you feel like if you're happy or sad today, that beat you're going to make, whether if it was happy or sad, there's a community that's going to connect with it just because they may be happy or sad. You know what I mean? So it's like, I feel like overall, you can make whatever you want as long as you know it's quality and it's good content. If it's really, truly what you're creating and how you feel, people are going to feel it, you know?
Exactly. Let me ask you this. Where did the name Steez originate from?
So that was like a big thing in like the North Scranton community, kids, the little gremlins. We were all shunned upon by the rest of Scranton. Even though I'm a North Scranton baby, I'm going to always say it. North Scranton's always going to be the best side of Scranton.
There's a beef in Scranton that I'm not a part of, but damn, is it crazy.
No disrespect, but like North Scranton kids, there's a lot of there's a good poverty side in North Scranton, but that's all over Scranton. And I feel like North Scranton, the only thing that North Scranton kids get shunned upon is being just like poverty-ish or whatever you want to like they whatever that is. And then I feel like every North Scranton kid ends up hating Westsiders because they're their first contact and they all just they're two different completely sections of Scranton. They all live different. The roadways are different. There's so one ways. There instead of in one ways in West Side, you have actual neighborhoods in North Scranton instead of weird one ways up a block, down a block. It's real weird. And then you have the Southsiders fighting with East Scranton because their first contact. And they just hate each other because, I don't know, they're both on hills. I don't know.
That's so like, odd, man.
Like, I don't know, they hate each other for no reason. But everybody, the four corners of Scranton hate each other.
You know, in the Poconos, I mean, it's Pocono Mountain West and Pocono Mountain East. So there is a beef in the Poconos. That's the part that I'm a part of. But it's pretty funny. So back to Steez. Where were we getting at with there?
So back to that, we're the little gremlins, North Scranton, and we're all skater kids, biker kids, scooter kids, you know, like we pull up with groups, you know, 10, 15 kids all on bikes, skateboards and scooters, sorry. And basically we had this like group, it was like Steezy. So at the time on Facebook, we would be for our skating and scooting and biking group, we'd be your name, middle name, Steezy, and then your last name. So at the time, we all had that, and there was like 50 of us that had it. And it went for like a summer and a half or whatever. And then it obviously everyone started growing up, stopped riding more. Like, you know, we're going into school. We don't have time for this bullshit outside for 10 hours a day, you know. So anyways, that kind of it started falling off. And then I was actually like looking into like the Steez, just Steez with no E after it. And that it's still like it's a skating thing. Like, you know, at the time it was a big skating thing. And I was like, well, it's a really cool, like chill vibe. Everything around skating is how smooth and chill and laid back it is. And I was like, that's me kind of like I'm just like nonchalant. Don't really care for anybody or anything but myself. And I was like, I just like go about my day and stay out of people's way. And I was like, I'm just going to be Steez. And I was like, that everyone didn't have it in their middle name on Facebook. I was like, it's washed up now for them. So I'm just going to capitalize and make it a brand.
There you go, man. Way to take it with you. And you said you adapted it to without the E. Originally, when I thought Steez, I was thinking capital Steez, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like our generation, a lot of people knew that because it was a big name before it was not a name anymore. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I feel like a lot of people understood the Steez with no E thing. And then the E kind of confused people on whether it was Steez, Steez, or what it was like, what the E was there for. And I was like, I'm making it a name, not a word now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So the E makes it a name. Without an E, it's a like kind of statement or a word. Steez is another statement or a word. So if I make it Steez with an E, it's more proper looking and official sounding.
So there it is. That's how you got the name, right? So Steez, you turned it into a brand, right? Yep. Who is Steez? You know what I mean? I have here Steez as an engineer and also a producer. But what I also think is important, if you get help, the people understand the difference between producers, engineers, the person who mix and masters, so on and so forth. You know, just let's get into that. So am I wrong to call you a producer / engineer?
No, that's exactly what I would want people to call me by. You know what I mean? So I'd say to start off, producing, we'll start with producing, let's say. So producing, basically, all producers do is whether they are making an instrumental for a song that's about to get done, or they could be the idea maker for a song that's about to get done. You don't necessarily have to be doing it to get to be one. So ultimately, there's people we go to label. Say let's go to labels, right?
Okay.
There's a producer that says, hey, we need to make a beat like this, 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 and this. And then they have label contracted beat makers or drum makers or melody makers, and they all put them together to produce in their own way to make a beat together. So overall, being a producer, it is confusing, but it's not confusing. It's just you're making a beat. So overall, you're making a beat at the end of the day. That's what you're doing. The instrumental, the idea of the song, the basic starting point of the song, that's what the producer is. You're starting the basic starting point of a song.
The way I would look at it, just by doing my own research, is I labeled it as kind of like the foreman of the job. You know, mm-hmm. The producer, in my opinion, is, like you said, it may not be his idea, his or her idea, but, you know, they're going to try to help that artist and help bring that vision to fruition.
Yes.
You know, tell me what you want to do. All right, I'm the guy. I know the people. I'm going to dispatch and collect the right people to make your vision come true. At the end of the day, I feel like the producer is the one that's going to sign off on the final product and be like, all right, this is what we did. So a foreman, if you would, in my opinion.
Yeah, and like I said, you could be a do-it-all person, or like you could be a label that your one role is to put out good ideas and find people to do it. You know what I mean? Pay what you think the best person is to do it. And labels do it kind of like that way. They pick the best, what they think, and they shoot ideas to them to make it happen. And but again, ultimately, you can be a do-it-all person. You could say, I need this, this, and this done. And one person could produce that beat and get it all done for you with the vision. But as I see it, is producers, when they... Even if the artist wants something done their way, producers will pick up on their vision and ultimately finish and perfect their vision and give it to the artist before they start recording. So I feel like producers read the artist before the artists know what they actually want and produce that sound where they're like, wow, this is great. And the producer's sitting there, the producer will be like, yeah, I know you're going to like that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Producers pick up on a lot of things. Like it's a tough thing to do, but you have to be very understanding and able to read someone and read what they're saying to you to actually produce what they want to hear.
While we're on the topic of producers, right? I wanted to ask you, do you feel like, what are some of the skills and, you know, maybe mindsets that, do you believe that there is such a thing such as a producer's mindset? You know what I mean? Like things that are common amongst producers, things that they, if you were to want to become, maybe these are the things that you should try to harness as a person to expand on your creativity side.
I would say for me, before we touch up on the mixing part of things and explain that, I would say since I'm a mixing engineer and producer, I would say that like the majority of people that do both like me are typically OCD freaks and perfectionists because we're always so dialed into making things sound perfect. So everything in our mindset applies with music and reality. So we're perfectionists and OCD freaks with everything. So whatever it is has to get done perfect in our world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and I feel like that's the mindset for like producers and engineers, mixers and whatnot is like, we're just kind of like perfectionists. We're creative, but we know the reality and what we have to do to get it done.
Yeah, I see that. You have to understand, you have the creative, you know, outlook, and then also you have to confine within the laws of reality.
What is possible, but how do you do it? You know what I mean?
Exactly. So you need to be like disciplined.
You're just on edge at all times because you have to be like,
is that how you feel?
You have to be like a robot. You have to be like scanning everything at all time to understand what's happening around you. Like
like C++, like coding.
Yeah, like you're always coding. Walk into a new room, you're coding out everything that's happening. You have to like digest everything so you understand the room you walk into.
Well, like I said, it sounds like you had the mindset built for that. Even at an early age, you realized that. Which is good on you to understand that because, you know, for some people, it may be confusing at first to try to understand such early things at a young age can be overwhelming at times.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I don't want to say I wasn't raised as a hard, hard childhood. I'm not going to say I was, but I wasn't raised on the easiest one either. And I know a lot of people weren't, you know what I mean? So, you know, seeing my parents, both of my parents work two jobs every day, you know, go home, go to work. We go to school. We come home, wait for them to get home and cook dinner. You know what I mean? So that was my life. So just seeing my parents at such a young age be so dedicated to work, and it was always to put on for the family and put on for us. So they always took care of us, and it taught me at a young age to really understand what obviously love meant and what family meant. To a person, like, you're not just gonna do all these things for somebody because you don't care for them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it taught me the reality of life quick. Like, my parents love me. They love me and life isn't hard. So they're working extra hard to take care of me so I have what I need. So like being around that, it taught me very fast. Like, I can't play any games. I got to take everything I do seriously. And I just, when I would just sit there and be quiet, I sit there and observe. And that's all I did as a kid. I was a very quiet kid and just observed everything.
It's the way to be. Yeah. Learn a lot that way.
Yeah.
Read the room.
You just got to keep reading.
So let's refocus now. Now on to the engineering. Okay. So for engineering, for me, what I was reading upon was, it's more of like the technical side of things.
Yeah. And that's where the OCD comes in and the perfectionist stuff really comes in, is because when you're recording a song, being an engineer, you are the person in charge of making sure the artist records everything they want to their perfect standards and mainstream quality standards. So mixing creativity with mainstream quality is your main goal. And that's where being precise and perfect on cleaning everything, recording everything perfect, has to be in place. Because I can record a hit song, but let's say the mic gain on my microphone was too loud or too high, and the recording of the vocal was distorted. And let's say we have no more studio time left, quote unquote, no more studio time left. What do I do now? I have to clean this distorted vocal the best I could to sound like a hit song. We know it's a hit song, but that distorted vocal might be holding it back because you probably can't clean it up sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So being an engineer, you have to very, very, very precisely focus in on what the artist could do and can't do. And when they do something good, make sure there's no flaws behind it. Just because, like we were saying, beats make you feel some type of way. So if you're recording a song and the artist starts riding on it and it's sounding really good, you're not paying attention besides, oh, this is good, sounding good, like we're good, kick back. You still got to make sure there's not anything happening in that recording at the time that you might miss because you're just enjoying the song. So, like I said, you always have to be on edge. You have to be ready, listening, reading all the time. Can't let any second go by because that 1 second could be a hiccup in a song and you might not hear it until it's posted.
So it sounds like the engineer is probably one of the most important roles because they have a lot to do with the final product. They're there when it's actually being recorded and making the adjustments on the fly to make the final product, as you said, mainstream quality.
Yeah, let's just say top 100 Billboard, every song is probably in $50,000 to $100,000 studio, and they have $100,000 promoting budget behind it. A band lab song is never going to make it there. Never.
Gotcha.
Ever, ever, ever.
You hear that? Bandcamp's not going to make it. You got to understand that, guys.
It's just unrealistic unless you're the next Michael Jackson. It's unrealistic.
And let's talk about studios. Let's talk about where you work out of. Where do you work out of, my friend?
I have the blessing to work out of Encore Studios. I've been there the last like 2 years, and they've been open arms ever since I showed up. They were just kind of looking for an engineer, and I hopped in at the right time with a meeting with Gus the Savage. And shout out Gus. He's basically the one who landed me this position. And I was just there to look over a meeting with him that he had with Encore at the time. And we ended up talking, and they said, hey, we need an engineer. And I was like, hey, I'm an engineer. 2 years later, I'm, you know, head engineer, hip hop engineer of all, whatever genre, really head engineer for Encore. And it's been awesome. We've been just upgrading since I showed up, getting new equipment, making the studio look newer, making the studio more feasible for clients to want to come into. So it's been fun. It's taught me a lot about if I was ever to be on the road and hitting different studios, trying to do what I do best and produce the same sound I do, knowing what I knew before then compared to going to Encore, I wouldn't be able to produce the sound every time at different studios or just on my laptop or at the studio or whatever it was. Encore, I feel like they gave me a space that I was able to grow myself and teach myself and learn on the equipment that was there that could bring me to mainstream standards. And I feel like I've just been being blessed these last 2 years and just growing off of it, trying to make them proud and bring them business and make Encore itself shine as much as I could.
Big shout out to the guys at Encore Studios.
Yes, sir.
I have been there. It is a wonderful studio. You know what I mean?
You never think about it, but it's kind of like a heavy hitter studio in the area. It's you could do, I'm not going to lie, we could do whatever you'd like at that studio. Whatever it is you have in mind with music, we could do that.
It's a wonderful studio. I was there for the Trudy show, and I had the pleasure of checking out the space that they have. And, you know, you mentioned how working with Encore Studio has elevated your game and helped you build your confidence. If you were to go to a different studio, it's like, oh, cool, no problem. I already know a few of these things because the equipment they have there is it's professional, man. Like the board that's on that table is insane. Like that's the amount of dials on that thing.
Okay. So that's an actually like not ancient, but it's more traditional analog board. So we ended up getting rid of that. And now we have a Studio Live Series 3 64S. And it's basically the same thing condensed down into 3 feet.
Oh, nice.
So like now it's all digital. You just click a button and it brings from your first 32 channels to the next 32 to 64 channels. Wow. So it's like instead of all those mixers, you just click a page and oh, there's the next row in the same spot. You know what I mean?
Making it simpler, man.
Yeah.
You know, when I was searching your social media, I came across a studio that was called Route 6.
Oh, so that was a label that we were starting.
Who's we?
Encore.
Okay.
So at the time, Encore, we were starting a label, and we wanted it to be kind of all over based, like hip hop, rock, and try to just get all the genres put into one once we had our once we have our feet on the ground. And basically, the goal of that was to get local artists a chance to perform locally and try to place them in positions to go on tour and open on tour every show for other bands or artists and whatnot, ultimately to give them a run for a signing deal with a bigger label. That was the plan.
Okay, so that was a plan.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, two of the shares were kind of not on edge, but not fully committed at the time. And not being fully committed at the time kind of led to the fallout of them. So leading out to slowly on me, just me, I couldn't just push me as a label. So we threw it not to the side. We still have my best friend, Wicked Artist, KK. He's still signed under our label and we have great plans for him. We have music recorded. So we still have great plans in the works, but we're not pushing a scale that we want to bring in new artists. Right now, I think Route 6 was kind of just a try for the local area, and the local area clearly didn't know what to do with it. So the moral of the take was that you can't force all like the rainbows in people's face, like can't be all like perfect all the time and give them everything and let you have to kind of just let the path fall out for people and let them find their path. So like if you're starting out here in an area that people really don't want to get work in and take their career to the next level, it's hard to bring that next level business side to it and bring them with you to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we have KK, like I said, great artist, and he's always going to be a wicked artist in this area. And we're looking to slowly just rack up the vault with songs. And when it's time, just start dropping them and take over.
So Route 6 was still in the same building, correct?
Yeah. So Route 6 is just in the same building with Encore. It's okay. Just that's base. Encore is the headquarters, basically.
And it was just a different label. Okay.
Yes.
So talk to me about KK, because I did see KK. I did take a look at KK's music on SoundCloud. He's got some numbers, man. He's out there producing. But, you know, I did see that he was one of the first signed artists that you had the pleasure of signing. Talk me through that experience, the relationship you two have, and, you know, we'll piggyback off of that.
Yeah, so me and KK, we go way back. Elementary, we started North Scranton kids, you know what I mean? Elementary.
Bunch of steez.
Way back. And, you know, he was friends with my brother, my older brother at the time. He was only a year older than me, the middle brother. And so he was in my brother's grade, and I'd hang out with them and, you know, I'd get to know his friends. So I just knew KK. And over time, he moved around schools and ended up being in North Pocono area. And he kind of just like saw at the time when I was in high school that I was making music, and like he knew me. So he saw I was making music, and somehow, you know, the algorithm pushed our accounts to see each other.
That's cool.
So, you know, the algorithm pushed us. And long story short is we meet up at a studio, just like chilling, recording music with a couple artists. And basically we were like, you and I kick it. Like, we're good. Like, we're good.
Yeah.
And basically we just ran with it from there. And ever since we started running with it, I had my setup in my bedroom at my house at the time, and we were running with it, making songs. And it was the same thing with the Sweat Sweat Gang stuff. I went back to school, drop a KK song that we recorded, and the whole school singing the song, and everybody knows it. But the difference with me and KK was we ended up getting so close as like boys that we just go party until 5 a.m. drunk, blasted out of our minds, and then the next day or that night come home and record the song about that night party. And so many people would relate to it because there was people there in the school that we partied with, you know what I mean? So like if you were just connected with the right crowd, it passed its way down to crowd to crowd to crowd. And those parties started getting into other parties, and then other parties started getting bigger because more people wanted to just hang out and party, finding out in these songs that there was parties in the area. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. So it's like, it was a big like promotion scheme for partying, but it was also a promotion scheme to like get clout.
Hey, it worked, man. It worked. Yeah. So then for you guys to have that relationship and, you know, have them sign on a label, man, that must have been a pretty cool experience for the both of you guys, mm-hmm. you know, to see that starting at a young age and then progressively growing and getting together in the music industry. And, you know, you really never considered doing, never rapping, huh? You never, there's not one leaked song of Steez, you know, on a beat.
I never not considered it. I just know I don't want to do that side of business. Mm-hmm. So like, I have songs. There is songs like I did. I have a song with KK. He brought up an idea. He was like, "Yo, bro, we're both blonde haired kids."
Zach,
you know?
And Cody.
Yeah, Zach and I Cody. So wait, don't spoil. So we're both blonde haired kids, and like, he's like, "Yo, bro, we're just chilling," and he was like, "Let's pull up this beat. I got an idea. I want to show you." Sitting there, YouTubing it up, and get the beat. Plays it. I'm like, yeah, it's fired. Fuck with it. And he's like, all right, so here's the idea. I have a hook written, and the song's called Zach and Cody, like Sweet Life Zach and Cody's. And he was like, but Zach and Cody is you and I. And he was like, the hook is you and I back and forth, Zach and Cody. And I was like, wow. I was like, man. And I was like, you know, I don't really care for this stuff and don't really want to do it. Like, I don't care to make music that way. And he was like, yeah, but like, it's gonna be hard, which ultimately, like, it was at the time, it was pretty hard. Like, the music genre and generation at that time was just like, the music was just so simple and non-complex that it just, everyone liked it for some reason. So I was like, whatever, it's easy to make, let's just do it and see how it sounds. So we ended up making it, and it was like, it was cool, you know. It was cool.
I
fuck with it, and it's the whole thing is basically. I mean, my side is basically true. It's like, I mean, I don't want to be like a cap rapper, so it's like, there may be some couple things that would be out of context, but most of it, I'm not gonna be like, yeah, but I'm shooting. You know what I mean? Like, it's just sometimes it's in songs like that to make the story fit. You know what I mean?
So KK, at one point, he had that the chorus written. Do you ever find yourself writing tracks and reaching out to artists that you feel would be fitting for that song?
So basically, I would say yes, I could do that. But what I see is, my way of targeting is, if there's a trend in music going on already, I believe I showed you the other day, there's a trend in music going on already. You find that artist that's trending. And if you got to make beats, that kind of beat, you know, mm-hmm. it just takes a simple acapella over it, and you know it's working. You know the beat's going to work. So at that point, you either put it on your store or send it to people to sell it, or you advertise it to labels or that said artist and put that artist on it. You know what I mean?
So where do people go ahead and find your beats? You know, let's talk about that. Beat industry for you.
I'll have to give you the link for it. But right now, if you go on their web browser or whatever, search up on your phone and type in tracktrain.com/SteezPA. That's my 2024 beat store. Right now, I'm just working on getting all the vault beats finished and organizing everything, getting them ready with tags on them and posting them up. So that should be another, I would say come end of February time, that should be filled up with at least 50 plus beats. But tracktrain.com/SteezPA, TRKTRAIN.com. You can find me there. That's where all my beats will be. So just feel free to ever check in, or on my Instagram page @SteezPA, on all social medias, just DM me. We can make a custom beat together. You know, whatever you want to do, just let me know.
Awesome, man. And I wanted to ask you this, all right? Just put you in a few hypothetical situations.
Yeah.
Okay. I have it right here. Let's say I'm a new artist, right? I'm a newer artist. Let's say I started it like a year ago. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm still very fresh in the game. Okay. And what are some of the certain things that you look for within an artist as a producer? What are some of the things that you look into, whether or not you want to work with this person or if you do not want to work with this person?
I would say on the recording side of things, for Encore, I don't really care what I work with, because most of the clients that come through to Encore aren't going to pay $60 an hour to record something that isn't good.
Okay.
So that kind of stimulates the clientele group down naturally itself. You know what I mean? So paying that hourly rate is kind of, if you're not dedicated to music, you're probably not making quality music. And the ones that are dedicated are either making quality music, or you can see what they need to learn and they can just learn and get better. But the ones that are dedicated will pay the rate for your passion and your time. You know what I mean? The studio's time and space. So the ones that are serious, they kind of just do what they have to do, and they show up and they get good music made. And the ones that aren't serious don't go to the studio.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, I think that's a great way to gauge it. I do the same as well when I have artists who talk to me and try to come on the show, is I look for the quality.
Yeah.
Okay, big quality, as you mentioned earlier, Bandcamp or whatever. You know, some people can make a bop off of Bandcamp.
No, don't get me wrong. I see some hits because it just gets so distorted and it's all like dance songs. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. It's like some hits come out of them, but quality-wise is what matters.
That is how, respectfully, I gauge artists as well, is I'm looking for quality. I'm not going to put you on a platform if I don't think your music's good. That's true. That's
overall, yeah, you don't want to, one, you don't want to humiliate anybody, you know what I mean? If someone's on here and people end up saying, why was he on here, you know what I mean, or make fun of somebody, they might not respond to that well, and you might look like a bad guy, you know what I mean? So it saves everyone a hassle at the end of the day.
Yes, sir. All right, so now let's flip the roles now, okay? This is another hypothetical. Let's flip the roles.
Yep.
Now you're going out attempting to recruit an artist, right, for a vision that you have, and you feel that the perfect person, that person is the right fit. You know, how do you approach that person? How do you go about making that interaction or connection, even if it's with someone that you've never met before?
So the first thing I would start off with is, like, basically, if I'm working with somebody that wants to be paid or not wanting to be paid. So if I was judging it on someone that wants to get paid, then I would obviously contact them in a professional business manner. I'd, you know, hey, blah, 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 I am so-and-so from blah, blah, blah. Here are a couple of things I have listed, or songs I've done and whatever. I have this beat I'm making, and I feel as if the beat is already finished and I already could hear your voice on it. Would you feel comfortable on negotiating a price for a verse or a hook and verse for this song? And they will either respond, yeah, let's make the deal at this price, or if they like the beat that I sent them with it, let's do it. You know what I mean?
Have you had that interaction?
There is a couple of people that I had the interaction, like, yeah, I want that. But I wouldn't say anything over, like, a real, real expensive, like, charge. Like, nothing that's going to be over $500 for a feature that I would have to, get that. I'd never lucked out on anything, I would say, over $500. You know what I mean?
Understood.
So it's like, if I was hitting somebody, it's like, whatever, let's say Travis Scott, he's $200,000-$500,000 feature, like, he's probably gonna make me pay. You know what I mean? So it's like that kind of stuff. I don't really, I don't push for the freebie. I push more for, let's get this done. So if they want to get paid, let's get this done. But most of the work I do is just basically like, hey, could you get this beat done for me? Could you make this beat? I need this remixed, or I need this type of song made in a new beat. This is the reference I'm going to give you for it, or whatever. So most of the stuff that I do is just direct contact. And if I'm ever making beats, I have them vaulted, and then they go in packs to whether it's a label manager or an A&R, or the direct artist themselves, that I have their email and contact, or a phone number that I have off them already. I would just send them a pack direct. And then ultimately, if the beat gets used, you get your royalties.
When do you feel like you turned a page. You know what I mean by that? Turn a page.
I turned a page at a young age. Okay. So I'm waiting to turn like 50 more pages right now. I'm just like, I'm a little stuck. I'm stuck on like page 5 of 100, I feel like.
Okay. Why is that? Why do you feel that way?
I feel like I'm ahead at what I do for my age, but I also feel like there is also way more adulthood down the road that I'm going to experience new business paths of learning. And like, just right now I'm young, I'm 21, you know? So like me going out for a 1 week bender, 24 hours a night at a rap show that I'm hosting, or I'm supporting an artist that's there, or I got to record music all day long and then go to this show and then sleep and then record music again. Like 21, I can do that, but let's say 20 years down the road, what am I going to run into there? You know what I mean? My body's going to decline a little bit. I'm not going to be wanting to do that. So like, I'm still going to have to learn the down the road part. How am I going to make my passive income? How am I going to make my money larger, faster, without more work? So that's where I feel like there's going to be so many different roads and paths of learning what is the correct way of doing that and what is the most successful way, because you can be successful, but how long is the success going to last? Mm-hmm. So it's like you can go 10 ways to get to success that won't last, or 20 different ways to get to success that'll last forever. So I feel like there's a lot that I could just sit back and experience and live in this kind of scene and do it and just learn by doing it. So all I have here now is just kind of experience, just keep gaining more experience and learning off of it.
You're looking for longevity.
Yeah, yeah. Ultimately, because you, like I said, I took this into the business matter at such a young age because I saw the reality of it. I'm not here to blow up overnight. I'm here to make a career, just like my parents are making a career. You know what I mean? So I know the chances of becoming a Hollywood hit or whatever is slim to none. So why not just take over where my hometown is and expand that knowledge to put myself to that slim to none chance?
And you're doing it, man. You're doing it well, because, you know, prior to the podcast, we were just talking on the phone. And, you know, you were like, yeah, man, as I mentioned, I'm like, yeah, I just keep hearing Steve's PA, Steve's PA, Steve's PA. Mm-hmm. And you're like, yeah, man, like, I work with a lot of these guys and a lot of them come to me, even if I'm not even working on a project, they'll still come to me and ask for my opinion, you know, because they respect you and they hold you to a standard. And they know that you have an ear for it, you know, so
100%.
You're doing it, man. You're doing it as well. Listen, I heard about something called Project 570. Okay. Would you care to expand about that? What was that exactly? To my understanding, it was, were you putting on a show?
Yeah. So my main thing is, like, as we've been saying in this conversation, is I feel like I came to my senses at a young age. So I also felt like I was just more mature and older than my age group, where most of the artists in this area at the time and still now are close to my age, and we're all still kids, you know what I mean? We're all searching how to live, you know, trying to make a life for ourselves. So I feel like they realized as well that I learned how to put reality out of the imagination. So when they are around me, they understand that I'm going to give them the honest, brutal truth.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And what really has to get done to get it done. So it's like, if the song's good, I'm going to say, hey, it's good, but you also need to clean up the mix and whatever. Or, hey, it's good, but you also need to add another verse. You know what I mean? Like, hey, it's good, but you didn't put enough energy in it. You know what I mean? Like, stuff like that. They know I'm going to pick out that sound and boost that song just that little bit to finish it.
Good for you, man. The people are coming to you. They're asking. So Project 570, you were putting on an event. What was that exactly?
That was basically a show for all the locals to experience that spotlight that they haven't had. So not saying that they haven't had, but a lot of artists in this area, when they do get to perform, it's whether it's anything, an open mic, or they're just there for a certain set, or they're there opening for something, they never have a show for themselves.
I hear you.
So I thought of the idea. I was like, hey, you know, like the scene's pretty booming right now. Like people are making music. People are into it. People are getting support. And there's a couple kids around here that are doing good. Like, you know, the city's liking them. So I was like, hey, like the Keystone Stage, I thank them for everything for that night. You know, they gave me a great, I'm pretty sure I was the first show there, actually. First actual show. They did like some, like a comedy night or something, or just like a testing night. But I was the first official show there. And yeah, so it was like, I got to thank them. I did it at the Keystone Stage, and it's a nice smaller venue to fill up. You could still fit probably like 125 people in there if you really wanted to. And it's a nice venue. They had a great speaker system. It was all lit up already, set to go. Perfect for our budget, perfect for our group, perfect for the size and amount of people coming. It worked out. And so I got that venue booked, and I was like, all right, let's look for artists. So I was like, let's think of who could make it, who would want to make it. But also the downside of it is I'm not looking to make any money on this show. So you guys are also funding it. So I found the plan to make the show happen under everyone's teamwork. So I had vendors there that paid for their slots to sell their clothing or their products, whatever it was. I had vendors there paying for their tables. I had the artists. I hate to like put it like that, but it's a local event. I had artists that had to pay for their spot, but at $50 a slot to perform a show that you could invite anybody and all your friends to and do whatever you'd like to do, have your own private, you had your own private artist room, and then you had your stage and your set for X amount of time for yourself. So I gave these artists a chance for a small fee to have the night of their life at something they never did before or never had the experience to actually enjoy for themselves, and not just the fact that they're opening for somebody or just on an open mic, you know?
Are you planning on recreating anything of the sort?
The Ritz Theater, man. I'm going to be back there. Project 570, Project Scranton. And I don't know what it's going to be, because I want to make it an annual thing. Like, I really want to make an annual thing. So I don't know if it's going to be Project 570 or, you know, Heart of Scranton, really make it just Project Scranton and make it a local thing. But I definitely want to do it again and try to get this one at the Ritz Theater. Besides this time, it's probably going to be, I want to do like five locals, I think, as the openers and as the of the night. And spread that time out, and then give someone trending at the moment in this summer, and try to bring a big headliner to the stage and get Scranton some fun. You know what I mean? Right at the Ritz Theater.
I think that would be amazing, man. I think you should really put it together. You know, I've talked to artists. You know, I've talked to one artist in particular who mentioned that they wanted to collab with a few different artists. You know, I asked him. I said, if you were to marry Scranton, what would you do? He said, I'd make a mixtape with all the artists in Scranton. So then I asked him, I said, what's stopping you from doing that now? And, you know, he was like, damn, you're right. And I'm like, yeah,
you're right.
You know, so, no, but you already got the plan, and you can put it to action. You have put it to action. I bet the response from the crowd was immaculate.
Yep.
The people of performing definitely appreciated the platform. And yeah, man, that was a fantastic event that you put on. And I hope to make it to the second one when it does become an annual thing. But dude, believe it or not, bro, we flew by that hour like fast, like super fast.
I know.
Fast,
I feel dude. Like I told you, dude. I mean, hey, we're going to get talking.
Yeah, we got to talking, bro. Like, I mean, I kind of got into my questions, but I kind of had some more, but it's all good, man.
You
got to
get the stories out. People got to understand, you know?
Exactly. You also race cars. That's crazy, bro. I wanted to talk about
it's
that.
It's like, pop the picture right here.
Yeah, no, for sure. But with that being said, you know, before we get off the air, I want to give you the floor, and then we're going to transition into tea time.
Yep.
So if there's anything that we missed, if there's anything that you want to leave for the people, once again, thanks for joining me here on episode 99 of the Middleman Podcast. The floor is yours, bro.
Man, what can I say? I'd say the best thing, man, is if you want to get really, really, really good work done and strong quality content done in the Scranton area, or if you end up passing by or you're just in the surrounding area of PA or Scranton and whatever it is, I could work with any budget. If you need to make a plan to come out here and stay a couple nights, we can work a budget out and get you some lock-in sessions for a good deal. You know, if whatever you need, we can get it done. Like I said, just at Steez PA on all social media platforms and just hit me with the DM and we could talk about beats. We could talk about mixing. We could talk about mastering, whatever you want done. We can get it done. Also check out my beat store. That'll get done and we'll have beats select up there for you just to choose from. But other than that, I just got to say, if you really, really, really want to make good music, and you want to work with somebody that's dedicated and could understand your vision and your passion, definitely just give me a call or DM me, whatever it is you want, and we'll get it kicking. I can promise you that.
You heard it. You need something done. Check out Steez PA at Encore Studios, man. Yes, sir. It was a pleasure. Once again, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Guys, stick around for tea time. We got something exciting. We're going to try to put something to the test. Steez is going to cook something up.
Yes,
so
sir.
Make sure you stick around for tea time. Not brought to you by, but inspired by Arizona Iced Tea. And with that being said, I am the man in the middle, Kevin Martinez, signing out. Peace.